Have you ever seen someone living an amazing life and thought to yourself, how'd they get so lucky? If you are not currently living a life that's on your terms, a life by your design, then this podcast series is for you. This is the More Confidence with Luna Guy podcast. And in this special season, I'm going to be interviewing people who are living a life by design, living a life on their terms. And I'm going to find out once and for all if it is just luck or there's something more going on. Let's dive in. Dave Thompson, you have done some remarkable things in your life. And when I read through your bio, I was like, that gives me that there's so much more juice to it in there. I want to know, you live a life that's on your terms. It's pretty darn outrageous. Did you get lucky?
Look, there's a lot that was designed here. You know, I'm not going to say that luck wasn't part of it, but I do think you can make your luck. I
Okay.
think you can make luck by taking inspired steps, by doing hard things that scare you. And by actually chasing down and implementing and working on the dreams that you've got, I think you're more likely for luck. I prefer to call it grace.
Oh,
If we
what's
just
the
go
distinction?
the distinction, I think they're the same. I think they're the same. Like I was going to say, I would a lot of people in, so for example, in 2010, I entered a competition and I won a flight prize that allowed me to fly all around the world for the year of 2010.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was crazy. I took 75 flights that year. I went to
Oh.
New Zealand, Hawaii, Japan, Africa. My parents went to San Francisco and then Alaska. Like, I went everywhere. Everyone in my family went everywhere.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would go, man, that's so lucky. And I'm like, but the opportunity to participate in that came up. So many people would have just gone, nah, I'm not even going to enter. I entered. I then really deeply thought about these people that are putting on this competition. What are they trying to achieve? It was a marketing thing for a website that was launching, like a flight booking website that was launching. I'm like, what are they going to want? And so I really thought about it. Like it wasn't just a casual offhand thing. And then just things started showing up, like the opportunity to go on a Zoom call and make it to the last 10 people that showed up. I showed up to that call. I remember being sick. And here was the other thing. I was meant to, they were, they, I got on that call at the start of 2010 and they said to me, in April of 2010, we're running this competition. Are you available for those dates? And they gave me the dates and I checked. It was the exact date that I was meant to fly to Sweden to play rugby for the Swedish summer.
Oh my God.
And so what did I say to them? I am available.
I'm available. Say
I
yes,
am
figure out
available.
how. Okay.
Right. And then so this is what I mean is like I think luck and grace show up when you make decisions, particularly hard decisions, pretty sort of inconvenient decision for me to make. Like I had this whole everything lined up in Sweden. It had been like 6 months to get that organized, and I had to call them and say, I'm not coming. I've been given this other opportunity that feels more aligned and more exciting. So the I think a lot of people will face that fork in the road where they can follow the comfortable path of maybe what they've already set out. Very uncomfortable to have to like dial back that entire plan.
And all the commitments that you've made, maybe disappointing people, letting people down.
Totally. But this flight prize, this opportunity was so much more aligned for me. I could, my heart, my soul, everything was saying, you gotta go that way. You gotta go that way. You gotta go that way. And I was like, oh, I think it probably some people might feel that in relationships where they're in a relationship, it's comfortable, but it's not actually the one for them. You know, I've had that experience in my life, right? So
One of
painful.
your books speaks into
Ah,
one of your relationships, one of my favorite books of yours, for sure.
you know what I mean? Like the more, and I think this is the thing. So luck shows up when you make decisions that are most aligned for your path, that are most aligned with your heart, that are most aligned with your soul. And how do you know if that's the right decision? You've got to get very quiet and listen.
Oh.
And it's something that you know all about because you were just at Vipassana and we were talking about this, right? Getting quiet. Yep. You know, you might do that. But for me, getting quiet is being in nature of some form.
Yep. Yeah. You're an ultra marathon runner, right?
Yes. Less so these days. It's not an ultra, not considered ultra distance. I did run a 27K in the Snowy Mountains about 13, 14 months ago.
Yeah.
So that was fun. But yeah, I've done five ultras. And about the same number of marathons.
It's incredible when I think about your story and what you have done, where you have come from. You know, you have a background as a lawyer and you have 13 plus years in the personal growth industry. Mm. You know what it takes at every level to write a unique, well-positioned story for yourself, because you help people to write books, right? You're a 7-time Amazon best-selling author, entrepreneur and founder of Inspirational Book Writers. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, that's what we do.
It wasn't always like that for you. I'm hearing you that like the courage to make that decision back in 2010, you have this moment where you've committed to Sweden, you've committed to the rugby season, you've committed to go doing this thing, and another opportunity comes up. Mm. What did it take for you mentally, emotionally, inside of yourself, even spiritually, what did it take for you to cut an opportunity that was good in favor of taking something that was probably excellent?
Mm. Faith. I think that's a big part. Whenever I make decisions like this, there's definitely a surrender element to it. It's like, okay, this is scary. This might not be comfortable, but it feels so right when I get quiet and listen. It's saying go this way. I have to trust that.
Yeah.
And then I almost go into a bit of an observer space and just observe myself go through the discomfort with this faith that the good times, the happiness that is going to bloom.
Mm.
I need to trust I've been directed down this path for a reason. Mm. And that's hard to do sometimes.
Bloody oath it is. What are you trusting in? What are you surrendering to? What do you have faith in? If they're all the same thing, maybe they're three different questions.
It's a great question. I traveled the world as a kid. I've traveled the world as an adult. And there's multiple different religions out there and different gods. I think for me, the way I describe it, I do believe there is a God. Said another way, I believe there is a higher power than us. There is a natural force to the universe. If you spend any time in nature, you just see how there is an unseen energy that creates change. And if we tune into that, I believe there is a natural cycle of growth that all living things are on. And the more that we can tune into that, the easier life becomes and the less we get upset when our expectations aren't met. It's like, imagine going to the Snowy Mountains in January, Snowy Mountains in Australia, January is our summer. And expecting to ski in waist deep powder. It's like that, the number of times that would happen is like, yes, it does snow in the Snowy Mountains in summer in Australia. That does happen. It snowed 13 months ago in December when I ran that 27K. It literally, I had to scrape the snow off the car to even get to the start line.
Wow.
Don't tell the hire car company. They were like, do not take this car in the snow.
We'll not tell.
We won't. Well, we're now live to all your audience. So moving on.
Let's hope they're not listening.
Seasonally, the more we tune into the season, the more like, so if I go to the mountains in January in Australia, I'm not disappointed that there's no snow. I think the more we can do that, the easier expectations can really frustrate the mind. Mm.
I'm hearing with what you say there is that there's a, when we demand that reality is a certain way, we're likely to be disappointed.
When you demand it.
Yeah.
Because there's this, I think we can have an understanding of, we can be disappointed, particularly when it's when the ego has wants the thing. If it actually is soul aligned, if it's very true for us, then sometimes demand can be a healthy thing, particularly if you've been in a disempowered place or like sitting back, and then you finally come to that position of like, right, I demand that this happens. Like I'm standing up for myself.
Yep.
If that's the healthy step, demand can be a good thing. But if it's like over eager, over functioning, trying to strangle it into happening, trying to control it into happening through that type of demand, I think that's when we get set up for disappointment.
Yeah, I'm hearing that it's like that we can have standards. We can up our situation to go, you know what? I'm no longer going to put up with a relationship with somebody who doesn't love me. I'm not going to chase anymore. I'm not going to do that. At the same time, you end that relationship and then demand that every single new partner that you have is upfront and that is perfect and ticks all the boxes. You're going to find yourself in a position where you're expecting perfection from people that doesn't exist.
Yep, 100%. Well said.
You said before about having traveled the world and, you know, as a kid and now, it could be perceived, you know, you studied law and you have a background as being a lawyer, and you've, you know, I would consider you to be quite a successful individual in anything that you put your mind to, actually, be that handball, be that rugby, be that ultramarathon, be that, you know, having the inspirational book writers, be that law. There could be people who might perceive you as quite privileged, right? They could be like, oh, well, he traveled the world as a kid. Tell me for you, has it always been easy? Has life and success come something that has been easy for you?
There's a lot of work.
Thank you.
There's a lot of work. Like, I don't really buy into this privileged, like, hoo-ha that goes on the internet. I think it's a whole lot of people just getting hot under the collar for like if you've got time to go on about privilege, like I would rather use that time towards my goals, towards serving people. Like, look, okay. So am I privileged to be born into the family I was born in the time that I was born in, compared to someone who's in third world Africa, born into a slum? Yes, I am. The people that I've met traveling throughout the world, I've got friends of every religion, of every country, is I think the thing that's common among humanity is we all want to feel love. We all want to progress. We all want to do better for ourselves. And so wherever someone is at, even if they are born in the slum, there's like, I just get tingles about like my message to everyone is, let's not compare, oh, this person and this person, this person. It's like, let's just get better from where we are. Let's grow and evolve from where we are. Instead of starting to point fingers, I mean, that whole pointing fingers and privilege and this and that, to me, that is a waste of time.
Yeah.
Make yourself better, make your family better, make your community better. If you can make your country better, if you can get to that level of influence and make the world a better place.
Yeah.
Like,
irrelevant of where you started.
Irrelevant of where you've started. That's the thing. Yes. You know, I coach kids in rugby for a long time, like 10, I did a decade of coaching sort of 12, 13 year olds. And some kids would come in with no base of fitness.
Yep.
And just to see a kid, like, I remember we had one kid. He'd played computer games his entire life, never done any fitness, never done push-ups, couldn't do a push-up on day one. Mm-hmm. By the end of the season, he's fit, he's running, he's completing his 400 meters, he's doing push-ups. And at the end of the season, he's like a couple of moments of like executing a particular skill in a game under pressure. And the entire team is just cheering. I think his name was like Hugsy or something.
Yeah.
It's like, Hugsy. Yeah, man. And it's like he did one throw. One pass, right, that like some other players are doing like 50 times in a game.
Mm-hmm.
But he's done it once and the whole sideline is on fire. Like to me, that's it's progress for the individual. And if we focused on that, I think we'd be a lot happier and we would grow and evolve with more ease and more joy.
Oh, amen, brother. There's so much of what you just said that just that sings to my heart and gave me goosebumps on several times, because I think that when we position something like the woke culture of privilege, it suggests, I think it actually takes away people's personal power. Mm. I think it actually reduces autonomy that people have. Of course, yes, and I'm the same, right? Of course I'm put in a position of privilege. I was born in Australia.
Mm.
Like that in and of itself is, I have access to education in a way that many people around the world don't. Even just the fact that 40% of people in the world don't have a flushing toilet or access to water. I have that, right? But it's almost as though privilege in the context that it's used in society these days is, it has to be something that I'm meant to be ashamed about. Well, if I'm ashamed about my privilege, then somebody, that implies that somebody who isn't privileged should also be ashamed, and it takes the power away. Well, you know what? If I do have flushing toilets and running water and access to education, then I have a responsibility to be able to pay that forward as far as I'm concerned. I think that you would agree with that.
100%. We beautifully said. We had an example like this in the book writing intensive that we run. So we help people write their book in a week. And
amazing.
June of 2020, early June, and during that week, some of you will remember the George Floyd incident in the USA. And we had a book writer who was she's living in Manhattan in New York City, and she's looking down on the street and the streets are on fire because there's riots and it's absolute chaos. Single mum, got a kid, writing a book in a week.
In a week.
Pressures, right?
Yeah.
That alone. Then there's the street on fire. And then the
during
lockdowns. And then the entire world is, or not the entire world, but there's certainly some voices who were saying, you're a white woman, you can't speak now.
Wow.
Don't be writing a book now. And she was frozen by that. And she was like, oh, I think I need to just quit the week. And I'm like, and how does that help? Like, she has this amazing transformative information. She helps people in relationships. I'm like, if you don't share your piece, then there's all those people that have the problem that you solve that are not going to get that information.
Yeah.
And so then, what does that lead to? And if, like, sure, there are people in the world that don't have a platform or that don't have the ability to have a voice, but why not use your, like, if you feel so passionately that you want to help them, why don't you invite them on to your show? And like, for example, when your book's out, do an interview series, give people a platform that don't have a platform. Like,
Use your privilege. If you are privileged, use it.
Right. Like, and
don't be ashamed of it.
I don't know. This to me, all of this is just like that sort of idea. I just grew up with that because it was like, if you're like, everywhere we went from 0 to 10, if it was the third world, it's like you're giving your pocket full of spare change to the guy on the corner with his cup. It just, you just do it. Like, that was just like, at the end of every day, we're emptying our pockets to the guy in the corner. Like, there's just, or like, you know, you're in Fiji and the guy comes along with his coconut and he says it's a dollar. You give him a 20.
Yep. Yep.
You know, you're on the beach in the Philippines and they say the massage is $10. You give them $100.
Yeah.
You know, that was, absolutely. That's just what we did. Like, that was not even.
It's a given.
That was normal as. Like waking up in the morning and eating breakfast. It's just it's just what you do.
Yeah. And I can recall that my first time in a country where they do bartering, right? Where that's the culture. No, you have to barter. People say to me, no, it's rude not to barter. And I remember having this big bartering experience, maybe in India. And I gave myself a second. I was bartering and doing the thing. And I just said, just give me a moment. I need to go do the maths. And I did the math in my head and I realized that I was bartering over like 15 cents.
Yeah, yeah.
Like even if it was $3.
Yeah.
You know, I am an almond milk decaf drinker. that means that my coffee is usually about $6 or $7. For a coffee, for something that's just, I'm just going to piss out later. Like, and I'm bartering over 15 cents or $3 that means the world to this individual. I went back in there and I'm like, it doesn't, I'm being a dick right now. Like, because it's part of the culture. No. Okay, cool. I'm actually going to pay you your asking price and maybe more. I don't want to conflate the market, but like, I'm going to pay you asking price for the thing because it's literally $4.50. And I'm trying to get it down to $3.50. And what that means to me is zero. What it means to them is the world. And that's where the privilege kind of plays out there, big time. What trend do you see in society, in the world? Like, what maybe trend or mindset or behavior are you seeing in the world currently that you think is the most damaging? It's popular culture, but it's super damaging.
I think it's a bit about what we've already spoken about. It's this heightened sense of sensitivity. Heightened sensitivity, like, Luna Gaia, you have one leaf in your plant in the background that is hanging down, and that's offensive because plants should grow up. It's like, come on, come on. Like, when did we become so sensitive? Like, what happened to grit and determination in society? Like, sure there's this, maybe we went a bit too far with things like, maybe overwork and maybe like telling boys to toughen up and stop being pussies. And maybe we went too far with some stuff like that. But the answer is not to swing the entire other way and turn into snowflakes. That is not the answer. Like, yes, some more compassion, some more heart to balance out the harshness of like overwork. And, there's definitely shadows of capitalism. Like, let's just extract
Of
every single
course.
thing that we can get out of this entire thing.
Let's
Like,
bleed people.
let's like take this entire rainforest, but we didn't need to swing that far the other way.
Because that hypersensitivity, because sense being sensitive, we're similar ages, so SNAG, I don't know for those of you remember that term that came out in the 90s, the sensitive new age
Oh,
guy. Do you
yes.
remember that? The sensitive
Yes.
new age guy, that sensitivity has been considered something that's quite a an admirable quality. If we're sensitive, or if we're empathetic, if we have that kindness to one another, is considered a good thing. Considering it has, and I'm in agreement with you, I think it has swung so far that you can't say anything, and that people's feelings, discomfort, that, well, I'm un you've made me uncomfortable. We're not allowed to be uncomfortable. Well, you've triggered me. We're not allowed to be triggered. And to me, being triggered and being uncomfortable is how we grow. Yes, let's do it with sensitivity. Let's do it with compassion. Let's do it with kindness. But if we are not being triggered, if we are not being uncomfortable, we actually can't progress anywhere. Our world just gets smaller. Do you think that the pendulum will swing back? Do you kind of perceive that from a human behavior perspective? We were, don't be a pussy, toughen up. I mean, there's a saying in Australia that says, what is it? Go eat a bag of concrete and harden up, right? Like, it's literally like just toughen up. And we've gritted through lots of different things like world wars and depressions and economic crashes and things like that. Now we're all like, if someone says that the shade of blue is the wrong one, I'm crying about it. Do you think that we'll moderate? Do you see that happening in humans?
I think we will. The time scale on which that happens, I think it possibly could be some time. It could be 20, 40, 60 years.
Wow, a few
Like
generations.
longer time. There's a book called The Fourth Turning, which
Okay.
explains how society evolves in sort of four turnings each 100 years. So
Okay.
of between 20 and 25 years. And that book is the basis. Some people might have heard that quote or that line about how tough times create strong men, humans. Tough times create strong humans, and the strong humans create good times, and then the good times create weak humans, and then, you know, and it's this, it's that cycle.
And then weak humans make tough times, and tough times make strong humans.
That's right.
How that works, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And I see that that happens, you know, from reading that book, The Fourth Turning, and just sort of observing. I don't think we're going to get out of this sensitivity for some time.
Do you think it's going to get worse? Do you think that we're still, the pendulum's still swinging that way?
I do think it'll get worse. I think the censorship is going to increase. I follow the astrology very closely, and I think the astrology also points to censorship continuing to be a thing. However, what I do see happening as a counterbalance that I think is already happening, and I'm already seeing it, is people connecting in like-minded tribes.
Yeah.
Now, it's always been a thing. It's always been a feature of society, but it's really becoming pronounced, I believe, over the next 20 years. Like, you know, I think we've always connected. We've known each other for a decade or more. But like the last couple of years, as things gets crazy out there, it's like there's definitely, from my side at least, there's definitely been like a Luna Gaia, one of my people.
One of my people.
There's been a stronger like put her in the circle.
Yes.
You know, and there's been a stronger with all the people that we work with in our book writing and things like this. There's definitely been a stronger like you're in. Like you're in because you agree with the values and the vision and where we're going. So I think for anyone who's watching this and concerned about like, oh, the world's going to shit and I'm gonna have to put up with all these Karens and all this sensitivity. Mm-hmm. It's like that is out there. However, look for the tribes of your people. You will absolutely find them. If you don't find them, consider that your invitation to start the tribe.
Yes. Yeah, and get off the fence.
Yep.
If I would, I think that, you know, one of the biggest things of living a life on your terms that you do so well is that at some point you're going to have to draw a metaphorical line in the sand. You're going to have to stand for something. Otherwise you fall for anything. And I think that what makes people have the courage to live a life on their terms, to go do it and carve their own path and write their own prescriptions is that factor. People aren't going to like you. People aren't going to agree. And if you are still worried about what everybody thinks about you and trying to get everybody to like you, you will never find your tribe because you're appeasing everybody and no one can find you.
I find that just as you say that, that position feels really uncomfortable to me.
Cool.
It feels more comfortable to draw the line in the sand and go, this is the place for people that ascribe to this vision and these values, because the people, for example, the people in our book writing world love those people, greatest people. They're my people. So I feel really comfortable with those people. But it took me drawing the line in the sand and going, we are about this.
Yes.
Come join if that's you.
Was it always that way for you, Dave? Do you feel like you have been someone who has gone against the grain at large for the majority of your life?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I was school captain in year 12 at high school, and I was always getting in trouble for saying unapproved statements.
Uncaptainy things.
Uncaptainy things. Like a lot of my school updates, I would give in schoolyard slang using nicknames. The teachers had no idea what I was talking about. It was like code. It was like Morse code, but everyone knew that everyone's laughing. The teachers are like, what's he on about?
Oh, there's such influence in that, isn't there? There's such power in that. You went on to be a lawyer, right?
Yes.
Now, if I was to look at those kind of things of school captain, I take it that you did then fairly well in school. You know, you were athletic. You were probably at the top of your game in many different factors along those lines, and then went on to be a lawyer. From the outside, I could perceive that as quite prescriptive, like high-level success, prescriptive kind of guy. And then was it a 180? How did you go from I'm studying to be a lawyer, I passed the bar, I'm going to be a lawyer, to now doing what you do? What happened?
I knew, here's the thing. I knew from the first day of the first subject of law that it was not my people.
Whoa.
I was sitting in the lecture theater. There's 400 people. And I'm just like, this is not my place. And like it was, some bits were interesting. Criminal law was interesting. Constitutional law was interesting, funnily enough.
Mm-hmm.
But never more than interesting.
Okay.
And at that young age, I turned to my dad and I said, you know, this is not for me. And he goes, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I don't know.
Don't know.
And he goes, well, just keep doing this until you do know. Okay. And so, which I think is reasonable advice, reasonable. Where I went wrong is when people would ask me, what do you want to do? And I would say, I don't know. And I said that for like five years until I finished it. Instead of saying, well, I do know that I'm enjoying this, or I do, like, even if it was a skerrick of what I do know, because what happened when I left law was it was very much like leaving the tribe and walking off into the wilderness. There were no, everyone thought I was crazy. They thought, like, in my local.
Had you passed? Had you got your degree? Is that what happened? Okay, cool. And you were able to practice as a lawyer. Is that what happened?
Okay, so when you get admitted, I'm admitted. If you look at the roll of solicitors in the Supreme Court of Queensland, you'll see my name on the roll.
Yeah. Wow.
In order to practice, you need a practicing certificate, which is basically pay some money and fill out some forms. Sure. I never paid the money, and I never filled out the form.
Right. Gotcha.
So I can't actually.
But you're fully trained as a solicitor.
I'm fully trained. I'm on the roll. It's money and paperwork would allow me to actually do it.
Gotcha.
It was very lonely being off in the woods.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, he's lost the plot. He's fallen from grace. He was like achiever, all these things. But I had to find my own path.
Yeah.
And so that lost in the wilderness time was very fun because I did lots of adventures, but also very scary for a lot of it. Especially when, as a young man, there's so many society messages going, be productive, find a path, make money, contribute to society. And I'm like, I got no idea what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
It's hard to make, it's hard to be a strong contributing man. Like it's like there's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And I'm just speaking from my own experience here. Please. About men. It's not sound, it's been a lot of work.
Yeah. And it's interesting you say that. If we come back to that kind of privilege piece, society piece, I wholeheartedly believe that the most difficult kind of person that you can be in today's society in 2024 is a middle-aged, relatively wealthy, straight white man. I really do see that men, and I remember one of my older brothers talking to me about this even 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago now that I think about, and he's like, who are we meant to be? Like, we're meant to go out there and we're meant to be bringing home the bacon and we're meant to go achieve and we're meant to go do this, but now we're being told to be sensitive. And in 2024, now you're being told to be sensitive, but and feel your feelings, but don't be a pussy. Don't be a pussy, it's still there. You still have to be a man. Men still want their king to come home and bring the bacon and protect me, but I also want you to be emotionally available. I remember reading somewhere recently of like, if we want the men to go to war, we need them a little bit tougher.
Yeah. Yeah.
Genuinely.
Yeah.
Like, we can't expect them to be as gentle as a woman might be, because we're biologically, I'm not saying, you know, outside of the scope, of course, as the gender roles are as we please, but biologically the women are the nurturers and the men are the hunters. That's what kind of works. So we need men. Although the sensitivity is important and having that, but I would agree with you. I think it's actually quite the hardest position right now is men. And I'd be interesting to see if in our lifetime, the turning, as you were saying, that in another 25, 30, 40 years, whether or not men are speaking up saying, we've been hard done by for the last 30 years.
I wonder.
I wonder about
that. Because it's super not cool for a man to speak up right now and say I've been hard done by.
Oh, of course. It's not only not cool, you're silenced.
Yeah.
How dare you? If you speak to the woman in the building in, you know, your book writer, you are literally silenced. It's not okay for you to have an opinion simply because you're a straight white man.
And
that's what we would call prejudice.
I think you raise a great point. I really look forward to more men speaking about the challenge that they're of their experience of being sensitive and going to war, providing the bacon.
Yeah.
Like that is something I have directly had to navigate. It's a really tough gig.
It's huge pressure.
It's like, you want me to go out and slay, like, and I have to, like, I have no, like we've got a 2.5-year-old baby boy, Kai. He's awesome. There's been times in the last 2.5 years where I've woken up because of sleep deprivation, not feeling it at all, feeling depressed or feeling anxious or feeling something, and then just going, I don't have time to feel these things right now. Yep. I just have to go and slay.
Yeah, I have to.
I have to slay. Like if I don't slay, like we got to pack up the house. We got to move. No, we can't have that takeaway dinner. Like have to slay.
Yep.
So yeah, I think that's a whole nother conversation, but.
Yeah. And then don't be a hard ass though.
But like, don't be a hard ass. But second you finish slaying, put baby to bed.
Yeah,
and be drop.
And be tender, and be listening, and be there, present with my wife, and be able to be open hearted. So toughen up, put the exterior on, go out and get. Don't feel your feelings until we want you to.
Yeah, it's like,
and then you must.
It can be done to any men or any women. Yep. I just want to say it can be done, and. Mm-hmm. I've been getting better at switching modes.
Yeah.
Transition time is a real thing. So give your man some space. Give him at least time to have a shower and change his clothes so that he can switch modes. Like there's a whole series of things that can be done there. But, yeah, it's a thing.
And I think that what I know of you, Dave, is that you lead, you slay with an open heart.
Mm.
And there's something to be said about that. So yes, you do have to, you have had to like toughen up on those days and get on with it, right? Mm. You also slay with an open heart. So you are out in the world open-hearted and prepared because you have your own back rather than having a closed front as protection. It's really interesting because in early stages of my career and what I've been kind of known for, maybe in the early days, certainly when I wrote my first book, has been around the pressure that society puts on women to be beautiful, right? To have body image, to look perfect. Mm. And the synchronicities here do not miss me at all. That women's job in society has been to look beautiful, right? To be beautiful, to have the package of, I need to look a certain way. That's the currency of the woman. The currency of the man is make money.
Mm.
And I'm noticing that as we become, as almost masculinity, I'm not talking toxic masculinity, but actually masculinity is being threatened right now. Mm. As that is happening, more and more men are worried about their body image in a way that they didn't 20 years ago. And I think that's a really interesting line that society is moving towards, the hyper-feminization of men. They're actually collecting the neuroticisms of the woman, and the woman and the hyper-masculization of the woman is now going, well, I need to go home and bring the bacon. It's a really, we can all do all the things, of course. It's the dance. Dave, you mentioned before when you left law, right? 5 years, you'd studied hard, and you were saying how you just found it interesting, sometimes a bit of interesting, but there wasn't anything more than that. That level of just being interested, how do you think somebody then goes into turn into something like a passion? How did you get to something where now it's not just a bit interesting to you, it's something that you,
I love
a path
it.
That you're, a mission, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you've got to go looking. You've got to go looking. And you got to try a lot of stuff.
Yeah, cool.
I thought maybe I was going to be a fishing guide on boats out of the Northern Territory.
I can see you doing that.
Yeah, totally. I thought maybe that. I thought maybe I will coach rugby at a Japanese school.
Mm.
I had various online business ventures that I tested.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was going to be a player agent for professional rugby players looking to get contracts. Yeah. With like overseas clubs where the money is, because that would use law but still be connected to rugby, something I loved.
Yeah.
I tried a heap of things. I looked in a heap of doors, and I think that sort of 18 to 26 age group, even 18 to 30, is the prime time to be looking.
Yeah.
And just if you're churning through the things, it's just, well, that's okay, that's not it, so let's just keep looking.
It takes 99 no's to get one yes.
Just keep looking. Just keep looking till you find it. And you'll know when you find it. It'll slap you in the face. You'll feel it. You'll be like, this is where I'm meant to be.
At least for now, right?
Like, at least for now.
For the next foreseeable future.
And I think as long as you find something for now that's lighting you up, it always leads you to the next thing.
Sure does. That's where that grace comes in, that faith and that trust, right?
Yeah.
It's going to take you to the next part.
100%.
If you're somebody, if somebody's listening here and sitting there going, they took the prescribed path in their 18 to 30 age bracket, and just say they're now in their 30s or 40s and they haven't gone looking, is it too late?
I don't think it ever is too late.
No.
Because if it's in you, if you are a seeker, you can bottle it up, but the desire will always be there.
Oh,
so are you going to do it now when you're 35, or are you going to wait till you're 45, or are you going to wait till you're 55? Like, if you bottle it up, it's going to blow you up at some point.
Yeah.
And yeah, you just...
Then you'll still not have a choice.
Yeah. Right? I think the earlier you do something, the more choices you have.
Yeah.
The more you position yourself for what's coming... the better you are when you get there, rather than, you know, the tide being perfect, the waves coming in and you're like, oh, I got to drive home and get my surfboard. I don't have my board shorts. I can't even take advantage of this opportunity because I didn't prepare, or I didn't foresee even some level into the future.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember Joe Parnay, who's we both would have trained under Joe Parnay from the Coaching Institute, and this has stuck with me since forevermore, is that if you don't squeeze life, life will squeeze you.
Yeah.
And that sings to me. And to live the life of your dreams is not for the faint-hearted.
Mm-hmm.
Those two quotes that he would use in that training were so utterly profound. Whether or not they first came from him, I do not know, but it's where I first came across them. They're so utterly profound, because if you don't squeeze life, it will squeeze you, and you won't get to have the choice very often. That's where people get the cancer diagnosis. That's where a big loss comes in. That's where you get hit by a Mack truck because you weren't listening to the feather.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the universe was tickling you to begin with, and people get hit by Mack trucks and then continue to go down the same path, and they don't listen. And maybe perhaps they get to the end of their life. You know, one of the biggest regrets of the dying is, I wish I just had the courage to live a life that I wanted, not the one that was prescribed to me.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, Dave, what has been your favorite mistake?
Ooh,
and what the world might perceive as a mistake or as a failure? What has been your favorite one in your life? One of the top ones.
One of the top ones. I think probably my favorite mistake, this is the one that's coming to mind immediately, is I was listening to the red flags, but I was not acting on the red flags in a relationship that I was in.
Mm.
I tolerated so many red flags. It was right in front of my face. My notes section of my phone says, I am concerned about this, and then this and this and this, and there's months and months and months and months, and there was red flags on day one. There was red flags before day one.
Mm.
And it ended horrifically.
Yeah.
But that was my best mistake because...
Yeah, why? Mm.
It wasn't the right person, wasn't the right path, and I needed to learn how to find what was right for me.
Yeah.
In everything, even in clients. Like, speak to someone who wants to do a book with us, and I'm like, oh, there's a red flag, not just for the reason that they maybe they don't have bandwidth in their life. Or like, oh, that person was overly critical of like one tiny, tiny detail. I'm like, books are full of 400,000 details. That's not going to be nice to work with that person because they're really just going to be sending criticism all day long over the tiniest things that don't mean anything. Yep. So that would be my biggest learning.
Favorite mistake,
listening to red flags in relationships because the upside is such a happier life. When you do listen, you just dodge a bullet.
Yeah. And what I'm hearing there is that you, in order to learn how to dodge bullets, you had to take a few.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's such wisdom in that, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think that people, and this we come back to that discomfort and the what does it take to live a life in the terms, do not expect that you can walk into the arena and be unscathed.
I didn't call them bullets at the time. I called them spears. I said, I feel like I'm, because what was happening in the relationship, and this is where I got a bit confused, is there was this wisdom going around the sort of spiritual personal development circle saying like, oh, if you just be a man and be present for your woman, the storm will pass over and she will open and it will be happiness.
Yeah.
And so I would just take her stuff and just stay present. And then after like a year and a half of that, I'm like, this storm doesn't end.
And I'm just getting wounded.
This is not rain. This is not even hail. This is not even snow. These are spears and these are like chainsaws coming at my legs. Wow. I'm like, I just saw with greater clarity what those people were talking about with the storm and the presence and the opening. This is not that.
It's not a storm.
This is actually, I'm putting myself in a really bad position and tolerating stuff that is not healthy to tolerate at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And we don't often know that they're spears until we've been hit with, you know, several dozen of them.
Oh, yeah.
That's how you learn it.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, with people who are sitting there going, oh, I wish I could live a big, bold, outrageous life. I wish I could, you know, live this, you know, outrageous and courageous. I want to live this. You know, people would often... I get the feedback of like, oh, wow, you live such a great life. You're 2 minutes from the beach. You know, you seem to be there all the time. I see you on the stories and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, and this is why this podcast and this conversation is so important to me and valuable to me, because if you were willing to do what I've done, then you're more likely to have the results that I have.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not willing, if you're not willing, like I left a relationship, I left 10 years of a relationship that I thought was going to be my forever person in order to pursue something that, you know, I left good for great. And oh, I left okay in actually hindsight. I left a bit shitty. I left a bit shitty for magnificence. And making that decision, if we could only see behind the veil, because people are too quick to look at the quote, the end result, because I think we're all a work in process, in progress, but people are too quick to look at the end result and think, wow, look at how lucky they got. Look at that. But it does take work, right?
It does.
In all layers.
Whereas the approach that I take now is, and this probably go really deep, really fast, is I look into people's eyes. The eyes are the window to the soul. Like I look into your eyes, Luna, and like I can see that you are someone that has faced challenge and made lots of really hard decisions.
Yeah, bloody oath.
You can see it, right? Yeah. You can just tell. Mm. And that's part of the like slowing down, the listening. Mm. Like when you're with someone, you can see it in their eyes if they've made those decisions that are in integrity with their soul or not.
Yeah.
Because if they're not, they just feel like a bit of a joke, like a bit of, because they're joking with themselves.
100%. Yeah. They're not willing to have that honest conversation. What do you think is probably the biggest quality for somebody who does want to start living a more courageous life or taking it to the next level? What would you say is the strongest quality that somebody might need in order to do that?
Decisions. Decisions. Mm. Keep even a small decision. Let's say you're someone that, you know, we were talking about you going to the beach. Like the decision to not get straight into work and to actually go to the beach. Or if you are working a 9-to-5, the decision to like, no, you know what? I'm going to go to the beach before I go to work.
Yeah.
Small decisions that you know are aligned with you. The decision to, you know, take the trip you've always wanted to take. Yes. Or even for some, the decision to order dessert when you're out at a restaurant.
Yep.
For me, it's kind of like the decision.
Or not as well.
Or not as well. That could be.
Actually, I'm overweight. I don't want to be. I've been complaining about this for my whole life. I always get dessert. Maybe I need to not.
Uh-huh.
Even if everybody else is having it.
Exactly. So.
And I need to be the odd one out.
The stacking of decisions that are in integrity with your soul and what you know you're here for. The stacking of those creates a really solid person who can be trusted, who you feel safe with, who you would follow into battle.
Yeah. Yeah. Self-led. Would you follow yourself?
Self-led.
I read yesterday of something like why discipline is so important. Mm-hmm. Why discipline is so important is because each time you say each time you did what you said you were going to do, you build trust with yourself.
100%.
And if you're somebody who often breaks your own promises, that is the marker of losing of confidence.
Yep.
How can you be a woman of your word or a man of your word or an other of your word if you don't keep your own promises even to yourself? Mm-hmm. You're not going to be a person of integrity if you're not willing to even keep your own promises. And that's the small ones. What time are you going to go to bed? You know, I'm going to finish after this Netflix episode. And then you don't, and you do it three more times. Hold yourself to account. That's going to build your confidence. And it's making those decisions.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
You and I could talk for forever. I know that we could. And we so very often do. I was also on your podcast and we spent a long time. There's one final question that I want to ask you, but before I get to that, this one feels like it needs to be asked. Mm-hmm. What nearly broke you?
Tolerating the arrows.
Yeah.
It bled me dry.
Yeah.
It took me to my knees, lost a lot of money, probably cost me 5 years of like my vision of where I wanted to be in life and things like this.
Your health was impacted?
Health massively impacted.
Your health was massively impacted. Yeah, you put on a whole bunch of weight, didn't you?
I was tolerating toxicity in the relationship, my body became this vessel of toxicity.
Wow.
So I got fat, my energy tanked. Physically, it became very hard to operate.
Yep.
Even though it may still have looked from the outside, I was still doing well.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very tough existence. So, that was a spiritual break, down on my knees. When I was sick, I was praying to the angels to heal me overnight. Like that was, it got to that
level. I need a miracle.
It got to that level. Like, please help me.
Yeah. Wow. And it's so interesting. The thing that nearly broke you is your favorite mistake too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the one that comes to mind is the one that you probably, even though you've done a lot of hard things in your life, ending that relationship and the crippling after effects of that, like I would call that the aftershocks, right?
For years.
For years to build yourself back up. And now you're thriving. You know, you're in a beautiful relationship. You have a son. Your business is thriving. Mm. You have helped over 300 authors to write their book in a week, publish a high quality book, and launch it to Amazon bestseller and beyond. Mm. You are an Amazon bestseller 7 times over.
Mm.
So you're now in a position where you show entrepreneurs how to expand their influence, authority, and impact using their best-selling book. Mm. I'm one of those people. Mm. I'm one of those people, and I've just joined you again for my second as well. Mm. And I got to say, there is no affiliation here from a, there's no commissions. There's nothing about this. Every single time anyone says to me, "I want to write my book," I will always tell them to go to IBW. Mm. And that's because the man at the helm of that is you, Dave Thompson. Mm. That's because you are a man of integrity. You are a man who has committed to the path, and you continue to. I think that's what I want to make clear to everybody. We are all works in progress. Mm. This is
100%.
We're not complete. It's not done. It's not over. Not until the last breath. Mm. But you, Dave, you're someone who is such a man of integrity, a man of his word, and that doesn't mean that we're perfect. It just means that if mistakes are made, if things are wrong, then you remedy it. But you speak with such authority, such kindness, such compassion. And I think that you are an exquisite example of how men can be an open-hearted warrior, to be honest.
Mm. Thank you. I take that as a very high compliment.
Yes. Yes. So you should. How do people find you? How do people work with you? What do we want to know? If we want to go write our books, or we're curious about the books that you have helped publish, where do we find
them? Great. So first point of call would be our website, worldwideweb.inspirationalbookwriters.com. You'll be able to see all our books, all the different programs we offer. We help people write, publish, and launch. So if you're getting started, we can help you map it out and then write your book in a week. We have the online book writing intensive. That's our Write Your Book in a Week program. And then once you've written the manuscript, we have a publish and launch program that helps you to do exactly that. We're big fans of just saying what it says on the label, what it says on the tin, that's what it does.
It really does. It is your publish and launch that. I remember I had written my manuscript, the first one, and I was like, oh, that wasn't the hard part. Like, the hard part was like, oh, how do I distribute this? Where do I go? How do I format it? How do I copy it? What about the covers, the ISBN number that you need on the back of it, all of the legalities and the details? I was like, I don't effing know. Mm. And like I always do, I'm like, well, there's an expert that I know that I trust that I'm going to go and get you to do it, because it takes all the – I don't need to worry about doing that. I'll get you to do it. Thanks. Thanks for that.
180 steps per book in our internal checklist for each and every book.
Fabulous.
And there's a sequence to it too. You do a step out of place. That's what we do. Come find us on the website, or if you're finding me on Facebook, because I'm like tagged through Luna's profile or whatever, please add me as a friend. Send me a message through Facebook. I really welcome that sort of contact as well.
Cannot recommend the team at IBW enough. I'll shout it from the rooftops for the rest of them all. There is a upcoming kind of tradition that I feel like is happening on this podcast. And I would like you to close with 5 words. Mm. Now, they could be in sequence. Mm. They could be separate. They could be 3 words and then 2 that are separate, whatever. 5 words of wisdom that you want to close out today's conversation.
Mm. I'll go back to the outrageous roots. Stop living a boring life.
Oh, yes. That is incredible. Dave Thompson, it's been a pleasure to have you here on the More Confidence of Lunar Guy podcast for this special series of How'd You Get So Lucky. Thank you for being here, my brother.
Thank you so much, Luna.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for listening to the More Confidence with Luna Gaia podcast. I hope you feel more confident, more self-assured, and ready to go tackle the world's problems and maybe kick ass in some of your dreams. If you haven't already, I would love for you to like and subscribe, follow, and maybe leave a review so that other people know how to find this awesome podcast too. If you're wanting to sink your teeth into something even more juicy, my number one best-selling book, Perfectly Imperfect, Your Complete Guide to Loving Yourself and Loving Your Body, is now available on all good bookstore sites, both in print, digital, and I narrated it for Audible as well. If you think that coaching or maybe one of my courses is for you, why not head to www.moreconfidence.com.au and get in touch and see if we can talk. And of course, you can find me all across the social medias. That's Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, YouTube, which is where you're probably listening now, or maybe even here on the podcast platform. Sending you big love and wishing you a beautiful day.